here at unfetteredmind.org. You'll find transcripts of this podcast series, and these you can read or download free of charge. The transcripts are divided into small sections with audio clips. This makes it easy for you to listen to the specific passages that catch your interest. If services like these are useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind. Learning from the lives of lineage holders. Sukha City.
Okay, the subject matter, or the topic this evening, is the life story of a woman called Sukha City, who came to be known as Sukha City. She's one of the lineage figures in the Shangpa Kagyu. Jungpa Nalger was a Tibetan master of the lived in about the 12th century. And he started off as a Bun priest, and then he studied Dzogchen. And at the age of 57, which was quite a respectable age for Tibetans in those days, he felt that he had not come to the level of spiritual understanding that he wanted. So he set out for India, and in his travels in India, which was an extremely dangerous journey in those days, he studied with a number of teachers. The four most important are Nigama, Sukha City, Maitrepa, and Rahula. These were all Indian adepts. Sukha City's story, and that's how Sukha City comes into the Tibetan tradition, through Trungpa Nalger and Shangpa Kagyu. Sukha City's own story, I'm going to relate it to you. But as I do, I want you to consider the question. This is all we know about Sukha City. Why was this preserved? And why is this all we know? It begins with a woman, married, and she has three sons in addition to her husband. They're extremely poor. And all they have left is one measure of rice. So the men say, we're going out to look for work, look for food. I hope we'll bring some back. If we don't, we'll cook up this last measure of rice, and that'll get us through, and we'll try again tomorrow. So the men set off. One goes north, one goes east, one goes south, one goes west. And while they're away, there's a knock on the door, and the woman answers. It's a religious mendicant in Indian society, a sadhu, begging for food. The woman sees him and is confident that her husband and sons will find food, so she cooks up the rice and gives it to the sadhu. He thanks her and leaves. And the men come back. Husband hasn't been successful.
nor has the oldest son, nor the second, nor the third. So they say, well, let's have the rites. And the woman says, well, there isn't any rites. What do you mean? Well, this sadhu came, and I gave him the rites, because I thought you guys would find some food. So the men got very angry with her, beat her and threw her out and said, get out of here, we don't want you anymore. So she wandered away, completely destitute, and went into a neighboring country. And she begged, and she was able to get some barley, some rice, and she brewed some beer. And then she went to the marketplace and was able to sell it. Happened to be very good beer. And with that, she was able to buy some more barley, rice. She brewed some more beer. And pretty soon, she had a good business going, a stall in the bazaar, steady flow of customers. She was doing fine. One day, this quite extraordinary woman came. Very striking. And she said, I'd like to get some beer. And the old woman said, is it for you? And she said, no, it's not. It's for my teacher, Virupa. He's a siddha, lives up in the mountains. I said, oh, in that case, just take it. Don't worry about paying me. So every day she came to the bazaar, and the woman gave her a measure of beer, and she went on and took it to Virupa. Virupa thought, you know, this is really good beer. And so he asked this woman, you know, where do you get this beer? You keep bringing this beer. It's really good. And she said, well, it's from this old woman in the bazaar. Well, that's nice. It's really good beer. It must be expensive. No, she gives it for free. To everybody? No. I said that you were a great master. And she said, well, fine, just take the beer. So she's been offering it to you all this time. Well, we'll have to do something for her. Bring her here. So the woman was brought, presented to Virupa. And Virupa gave her empowerment and initiation into the mysteries. And the old woman had such profound experience that she became her body transformed into that of a 16-year-old maiden. And she took the name Sukhasiddhi. And she studied and practiced very, very deeply and became very famous as this great teacher. And that's her story. In the Shangpa tradition, she's usually depicted seated with the finger pointing to the sky. And this is because among her many teachings, one is particularly well known. In the sky, in the empty sky, which where there is no awareness, plant your mind, which is endowed with awareness, Quiet your mind and relax. It's a pointing out instruction. Okay, so that's the story of Sukha City. No, as a life story, there's not a lot to it, is there? Or is there? What do you make of it? Well, let's look at it in a slightly different way. Maybe it isn't about a woman. Maybe it's about what happens. These stories in Tibetan are called namtar. That's the term. And they're a record of freedom. Tar is the word for freedom. So you have a woman and a family. In other words, you have the old order. And what has happened to this old order, this conditioned system? It's broken down completely. It can no longer support itself. It's down to its last resources. So the system goes out, tries to find something, but what's left at the center? It's the woman. And one has to remember that in Eastern thought, the woman is always the symbol for wisdom, for pristine awareness, for natural knowing. And when all of the conditioning is out trying to do its thing, trying to sustain itself, what happens? Well, there's a knock on the door. There's a spiritual opening. There's a sadhu, right? Now, is this beginning to sound familiar? When the system doesn't function, something begins to open. And the woman's response to this appearance of the spiritual is to nourish it. She feeds it rice. She's rewarded for her efforts by the conditioning of the system. In other words, she's thrown out of the system for nourishing the spiritual opening. Sounding familiar at all? And so now she's on her own, free of the conditioning. Free of the conditioning, she discovers resources that she never knew she had. She knows how to make beer. Very good beer, which is also a symbol for wisdom. And is also a symbol for wisdom. And beer, yes. And Vajrayana. Meat is a symbol of compassion and beer is a symbol of wisdom. Pardon? Oh, okay. And what does she do? Well, when another spiritual opening arises, she nourishes that too. And nourishing that, she creates an opening which she herself is able to engage. So this is my feeling about why the story is so faithfully preserved. It's not necessarily about a particular woman and what she went through. But it is a way of telling us now what we have to do. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I do have a couple, at least.
Please, Warren.
I love the story. I love the role of women. I didn't know that in Buddhist thought. I love the idea of fear and Japan, wisdom. I mean, it's. But most of all, I. That knock on the door and her being open to the unbidden. and the creating abundance for others. What a story.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. It's a spiritual opening, that knock on the door.
Yeah. When everything else is in the process of crumbling. Yeah.
And everything else what?
Is in the process of crumbling.
Yeah. In a cultural context, in a live Asia, if a spiritual person comes to you begging, don't you automatically give them whatever you have?
Yes. I mean, that is the culture. But
not everyone does.
Not everyone does. And you're not always rewarded for your efforts. Yeah. I remember when I was in India, sadhus would walk around the bazaar and everybody would put, you know, a couple of paisa or a little food in their bowl. And that's where the Buddhist system of begging comes from. It goes back much further than that, than Buddha. And it's still in practice today. There's still a pretty meager existence. Nava.
One I thought also that in order to be thrown out of the system, you need courage and faith, in order to do what she does.
You need courage and faith. Yes. And how would you describe that faith?
This is what should be done. No expectation.
Do what needs to be done, no expectation. Yeah. It's pretty open, isn't it? Yeah. And it's very different from belief. Yeah. And that's important. It's not about believing something. It's about opening and just accepting. Going into the mystery. Going into the dark, however you want to put it. Other thoughts? Clint? Yep. Raquel? Strike any chords? Care to share? Okay. All right. So over the next, I'm going to pick various stories from various teachers' lives, but I want you to think about them quite deeply, because most of the incidents that are recorded, while they may have actually happened, that's not why they've come down to us today. They come down to us through the centuries because there's something in what the record is. And one of the things that I think is very important for us is to be able to read or hear these stories and understand what they carry. And not only understand what they carry, but also know how to work with that in our own practice and in our own lives. Can you rely on the habitual, social, cultural, familial conditioning which you inherit? Bob?
No.
No. But how many of us do? No. How loath are we to actually let it go?
It's really interesting because I do something which is called the Alexander Technique.
Yes.
And it does very much with people and their habits and how they interfere with the best use of yourself on the mental and very physical level. because the moment you are connecting to your body, you are becoming much more present in the moment. And how, and there are certain procedures when you sort of teach people how to discover the balances, head and spine and all that, which facilitates basically the ease in your body. And pretty much you are putting yourself in the place where it's all at ease and there's anything possible.
Mm-hmm.
And what it stays in your way is the habitual responses. So the moment you sort of organize yourself, you take a moment, you always take a time to observe yourself and become aware as to what is it that you are doing with yourself, what is it that that is happening. And then by creating, by organizing yourself, by giving yourself sort of suggestions as almost mental to organize certain balances in your body, it opens that area which allows people to be much more flexible, or to musicians to connect to what they are doing and become all different relationship with a music instrument, between music and music,
yep,
and musician. And the habits are very present there, and that's what people are struggling with. So, you know, no matter how much you try to do something, if this habitual way that you are doing over and over, it's not going to be a different result in anything. So habits.
Yeah. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So over the next week, listen for the knock on the door. Nourish what's there. Trust your own knowing, the knowing that doesn't depend on any conditioning or anything that you have been taught. That may make your life a little interesting. Okay? So let's close here. It's about 9:30.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.